You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Matt Wehmeyer joined this week by Mets reporter Anthony DeComo. And Anthony, we thank you for the time. And let's switch things up a little bit this week and offer up some bold predictions, if you will, as the countdown to spring training is now officially on. We're going to toss some topics out there, Anthony. You give your position, either supporting it or shooting it down. So here we go. Topic number one. One of the following three names will be in the Mets opening day lineup in Kansas City, of all places. Either Yoenis Cespedes, Justin Upton, or Dexter Fowler. What do you think?
This is fun. Twitter will go nuts depending on how I answer this question. I am going to say none of the above. No is the answer to that, as much as it seems like every Mets fan on the planet wants particularly Cespedes back. And, you know, to be frank, I think Cespedes would do this team some good. It's just not going to happen. I've been saying sort of the same thing with this since day one, really since before the offseason began. I just don't see it. And there's been some newfound speculation that maybe maybe the Mets offer Cespedes a one-year deal and he's willing to take something, $24, $25, $26 million for 1 year. It makes sense on paper. I don't think Cespedes is going to be willing to do that. Not that the Mets wouldn't, but I think when push comes to shove, he will get paid. Maybe not as much as he wanted at the beginning of the offseason, but I do think he's going to get a multi-year deal. As for the other guys, well outside of the Mets' price range, they've never been keen on the idea of giving up a draft pick for an outfielder. Justin Upton, way outside their price range. So, no, what you see right now is more or less what you're going to get with the Mets, as much as many out there would love to see Cespedes in particular in a Mets uniform come April.
Yeah, I was going to say that sound you hear is the collective hearts tearing in half of Mets fans all across the country. But, Anthony, I am inclined to agree with that assessment that neither Yoenis nor Justin nor Dexter is going to find themselves with the Mets on opening day. But crazier things have happened. Of course, we'll see what happens there. Prediction number two. Jacob deGrom establishes himself as the undisputed ace of this star-studded rotation.
Wow, that's an interesting one. I'm going to say no. And the reason why I'm going to say no is nothing against Jacob deGrom whatsoever. I think he's going to have a good year. As long as he stays healthy and keeps that shoulder healthy, he will be dynamite once again. But there's just so much opportunity for someone else to step up and be just as good. You can point to Matt Harvey, who's going to have his first season, well, really his second season removed from Tommy John surgery, which is a big deal because history shows these guys are typically better in year two. And you can certainly point to Noah Syndergaard, who came on so strong at the end of the year in the playoffs. And if anyone's primed to have a huge year, it is Syndergaard. So I'm going to say no for those reasons. I just think someone, and much as we've talked on this podcast in the past about, well, you never know when someone's going to get hurt. You can't predict injuries, things like that. Something could go wrong that we're not talking about. You also don't know who's going to take the leap. It could be one of those guys. It could be Steven Matz. Just as these guys, you have to be wary of an injury coming off the innings, blah, blah, blah. How about a little optimism? One of these guys, whether it's Syndergaard or whether it's Harvey or whether it's Matz, can take that leap and really join Jacob deGrom, who was an all-star for the first time this year, and establish himself as that type of guy as well. I mean, we've seen it in the past from Harvey, so he would be the logical candidate, but it would not surprise me at all if Syndergaard or Matz took a leap and was right there with them at the end of the year.
And maybe we're talking about a modern-day Orioles rotation from the early to mid-70s with the four aces or five, whatever it was. And I'm sure Mets fans would
I think the Mets would be very happy with that.
Yes, I'm sure they would, no question there. Anthony, prediction number three. I want to get your take on this. Daniel Murphy, of course, now a National. And in his first visit back to Citi Field as a visiting player, he receives more boos than cheers during his first plate appearance. How do you see that playing out?
I'm going to say no, because New York fans are pretty smart, and I think they're going to realize that this wasn't a matter of Daniel Murphy not wanting to come back. I mean, to the contrary, Daniel Murphy wanted to come back to the extent that he was kind of holding out hope, even when the writing was on the wall, that he wasn't coming back. He was kind of holding out hope that he could still be a New York Met. Obviously, it didn't happen, and the reason why it didn't happen was because the Mets never really had any interest in bringing him back. They wanted Ben Zobrist, and when that didn't happen, they moved pretty quickly to acquire Neil Walker instead. I'm sure there'll be a couple of scattered boos in there only because where he went wound up being an arch rival of this Mets team. But I think people realize what Daniel Murphy accomplished here over the past almost decade. I think people realize that this guy bled blue and orange for a long time. And again, if he had his druthers, he would have been a New York Met again going forward. So I don't think that's anything to boo over. He was unwanted, so he moved on. And it's hard to blame the guy for that.
Yeah, and I would think that home runs in six consecutive playoff games would get him the benefit of the doubt from even the most hardcore of Mets fans. It should be an interesting scene nonetheless when he does return to Citi Field wearing a Nationals uniform, no question. Anthony, prediction number four. David Wright is dropped to fifth or lower in the batting order.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, and not on opening day, but I think it's going to happen eventually. And the reason why I think it's going to happen is Terry Collins loves stability in his lineups, especially up top when you get those everyday players. And David Wright's not going to be able to give them that sort of stability, only because he's going to be sitting a decent amount. We don't know how often it's going to be at this point, but with him battling this back injury, this spinal stenosis, really for the rest of his career, the Mets are going to have to work out a plan where they're resting him on a regular basis, whether that's once a week or two times every 3 weeks or however you want to work it out. He's just not going to be that 140, 150 game guy. So if you're really trying to achieve stability at the top of the lineup, and the Mets now have a deep lineup, much deeper than they've had in the past, it might not have that top-end Yoenis Cespedes talent, but it is a deep lineup with major league caliber quality players throughout. You have options up there. There are different things you can do. And maybe you move right down to number five, even if he's not slumping. And if he is slumping, all the more reason. This is a class guy. He will do what the manager asks him to do. He won't complain about it. So for all those reasons, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me in the least to see him batting fifth or sixth at some point this season.
Let's start here at the top with the reigning MVP, Mr. Bryce Harper. Easy place to start. Bill, Bryce Harper makes another preseason proclamation that the Nationals are going to win this year's World Series. Yay or nay?
Right now, I have to say nay because I think they still need some work to do. I think they need to improve their bench. I think they still need one more starting pitcher. And I'm not impressed by the bullpen so far, although they've made a dramatic improvement. So I think if they can get a couple more bullpen guys, then I would say yay on that.
And prediction number two, this one's a little bit out there, but I want to get your opinion on it. Again, involving Bryce Harper, he and his best friend Jonathan Papelbon make a joint media appearance at some point during spring training, assuring the media that their troubles are behind them and that they've wiped the slate clean and everything will be smooth sailing for 2016. Do you see something like that happening?
Well, that's a good one. I would say yay, because I think Bryce and Papelbon would like to show that there's their friends, that what happened last September, you know, or October, I should say, was just a one-time thing, and they'll move on. There's no question in my mind. They've already announced that already, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, and prediction number three, Bill. Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg established themselves as the clear-cut best 1-2 combo in all of baseball, similar to what people regarded Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke as last year with the Dodgers. Do you see that happening?
Yay on that, because the way Strasburg pitched during the second half of the year, he was unbeatable. He was arguably the best starting pitcher on the Nationals. Scherzer, no question about it. The guy has no-hit stuff. And I just think that's going to be a different story than what we saw last year.
And I know it's absurd to ask this because it's such a rare feat to accomplish, but considering what he did last year on two occasions, do you see Max Scherzer throwing another no-hitter in 2016?
No question about it. The way he threw the ball last year, oh, man. I mean, he could be unstoppable almost every start. So, yes, I can see him throwing another no-hitter, maybe two.
Okay, and Bill, prediction number four. Bryce Harper, again, the reigning MVP, a historic season in 2015, especially for his age 22 season. Entering age 23, he puts up even bigger numbers than his MVP campaign this past year.
No doubt about it. It's yay on that. because he didn't drive in 100 runs last year. I'm expecting him to drive in 100 runs, hit over 40 homers, and maybe win his first batting title this time.
And do you see him winning a Gold Glove, too? We know he's got the cannon out there in right field. You know, Hayward's tough competition, but do you see a Gold Glove for him, too?
I would say yay on that, too, because he's improved dramatically playing right field compared to when he played left or even center. So there's no question he has the arm, he has the range, and I'm expecting him to be even better.
And that's a lofty bar to climb, but if anybody can do it, that is certainly Bryce Harper, the reigning MVP. I want to go back just a tad to the pitching end of things. We've talked about Scherzer. We've talked about Steven Strasburg. A lot of buzz about a kid in the minor leagues right now, Lucas Giolito, who many say has the premier fastball of any farmhand in all of baseball. Do we see him in a Nationals uniform at some point in 2016?
The answer is yay. I mean, we're going to see him during spring training. And if he does well, I wouldn't be surprised if he made the big league team, the opening day roster. So I'm telling you, he's legit, and he is going to be, I predict, one of the starters in that rotation to start the season.
And another rookie that could make waves in 2016 is Trey Turner. He was involved in that odd trade. He was the player to be named, even though everybody knew he was that player who was not named or already named or whatever you want to look at it as. Do you see him contending maybe a top three finish for NL Rookie of the Year?
I can see that, but right now I have to say nay, because I see him starting the year in the minor leagues just to get more seasoning. So we'll see what happens. I mean, he's going to be in big league spring training. He'll be competing against the Danny Espinosas, the Steven Drews of the world. But I'm expecting him to be there maybe the middle of the year.
Certainly a promising prospect, both he and Giolito. We'll see if they have maybe midseason cameos for the Nationals, depending on where the team is in the standings. Exciting stuff, no question. Bill, one of the newest Nationals, of course, signing a contract on Christmas Eve, or coming to terms on Christmas Eve, I should say. Daniel Murphy, the former Met, he jumped sides in that rivalry as he takes over second base for the team. Does Daniel Murphy hit 20 home runs coming off his historic postseason for the Mets in 2015?
I would say yes. I think what we saw in the postseason wasn't a fluke. I think, do I think he'll hit 25 homers? Maybe, but I'll say he hit more than he did last year. He had 14 last year. I say he hits about 20.
And, of course, he gets six of those in six straight games in the postseason. So Nationals fans hoping that was the start of a trend and not necessarily an anomaly. And we'll see what Daniel Murphy does in his first season in D.C., in 2016. And Bill, just coming down the home stretch here, of course the Mets were the surprise winners of the NL East in 2015, took it all the way to the World Series. But do the Nationals reclaim the NL East crown in 2016?
As of right now, I have to say nay, because I still think, like I said earlier, they need some work. I want to see what they do with their rotation. I want to see what they do with the bullpen. And I want to see what they do with their bench. I mean, Dusty Baker wants to improve the bench. Cliff Robinson is a great player off the bench, but it'd be nice if they can get a guy like Juan Uribe could really help his team out off the bench. If they can do all that, then I could say they'll be okay. They also need to improve defensively too, because Ben Revere and Daniel Murphy are not below average fielders, so we'll see how that goes.
And you brought up Dusty Baker, and our final prediction here. Dusty Baker is a top three finisher for NL Manager of the Year. What do you think?
I would say yay on that, because the guy's a player's manager. He always gets the players to play hard for him. It's not going to be any different with the Nationals.
And great stuff as always on this Tuesday from Nationals reporter Bill Latson. We thank you for the time, Bill. This is Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Washington Nationals. So let's switch things up. And today's theme is going to focus on what will happen for the remainder of the hot stove season and the 2016 campaign. Mark, I'm going to throw a topic out there. You'll give your position supporting it or shooting it down. So without further ado, topic one on your plate, Mr. Bowman, is the Braves trade Julio Teheran before opening day, yay or nay?
Nay. No, I do not see that happening. Let's just go right to the point. I think that they'd be selling low on Julio Teheran right now. Yes, he finished the season strong, but what he did the first 4 months last season, I think that diminished his value to a point that teams would not be willing to give what maybe they would be willing to part ways with, you know, maybe a few months down the road. With that being said, I probably said they should trade Julio Teheran more than anybody else last summer. But once they traded Alex Wood, you know, I don't want to call it the anchor, but that is the piece that they chose to stick with, especially after they traded Shelby Miller, another guy they could have controlled for another 3 years. I think that you need to have some consistency up there at the front of your rotation as some of your younger guys are developing here over the next few years, the Matt Whistlers and Aaron Blair and Sean Newcomb, these guys, once they get in here, you need to have some experience up there as they go through their growing pains. So I do think that Julio Teheran will stick in Atlanta, not only through opening day, but probably through this year and in 2017.
Okay, Mark, topic number two, in the same vein, the Braves trade Freddie Freeman before opening day.
No, I think Coffey wants to keep his right arm or his left arm or whatever it was. He said he wanted that he would trade his right, whichever arm he said he'd trade before he traded Freddie Freeman. I'll say, you know, something similar about Freddie Freeman. Right now, I don't think there are teams that want to give up that $118 million he's owed for the rest of his contract without seeing whether his wrist is healthy. And you can sit here and say, oh, well, you know, a couple, you know, 20, 30 at bat spring training. That's not going to tell you anything. You need to see how that wrist reacts over time. So I do think that Freddie Freeman, you know, sticks through opening day. I, you know, whether there's a time in the future that the Braves, you know, if he starts to get back to his old self, proves that he's healthy, maybe there is a point down the road where they do opt to trade him. But my guess is no on that front as well. But I definitely do not see him being traded before he, you know, has a chance to prove whether or not he's healthy. And he's obviously a key piece for the Braves this year and for the future. I think that, you know, as we move forward, yes, they called some teams on him about the check for check interest in him back in November. But I think as we come to realize, this front office calls about everybody. They just do their due diligence up and down the roster. And, you know, but right now, my guess is that Freddie Freeman sticks here for the next few years.
Okay, Mark, topic three, Dansby Swanson was the gem that the Braves got in return in that massive deal for Shelby Miller, in which Miller went from the Braves to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Swanson, of course, the number one overall pick in the 2015 draft. And, Mark, does he reach Double-A sometime this season in the Braves organization?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that Double-A is a guarantee. I do think that he probably starts off at high A there with Carolina. And maybe he, the Braves, probably their wish would be that he could get to Double A by June. Now, whether he finishes up a Triple A or not remains to be seen. But there's no reason to rush him. You know, he's only played 27 regular season games, at least in pro ball right now. So, yes, there's a chance he could be in the opening day lineup in 2017, but I don't think that they're going to rush him at any point this year, other than to Double A, just to get a sense. Getting to that level, I don't necessarily say that Triple A is a guarantee, but at the same time, even if he doesn't get to Triple A, I think that there will be storylines around this time next year. You know, do the Braves begin the 2017 season with Swanson, or maybe more appropriately, will he be up before the All-Star break in 2017?
Okay, from a youngster Swanson to a veteran, A.J. Pierzynski, he is topic number four. Mark, at age 39, Pierzynski becomes an All-Star for the first time since 2006. What do you think?
You know what? I'd love to see that for him. I, you know, we didn't know what to expect from A.J. last year. You hear so many different things. He was a joy to be around last year. Just he's just the kind of – he loves the game so much, and you enjoyed seeing the success he had. If he can duplicate that kind of success, great. I do think that the amount that he played last year took a wear and tear on his body. I don't know how that will affect him this year. I also see him, you know, probably playing just 3 to 4 times a week. I think he and Tyler Flowers will be sharing that catching position pretty consistently. So I don't necessarily see him becoming an All-Star, but at the same time, Dave, that was one of their better signs of this offseason, just because it provided some stability there. Some of these young pitchers are going to be listening to that same voice that guided them last year. And, you know, I think they need that kind of attitude within their clubhouse. No-nonsense guy who isn't afraid to tell some of the young players, you know, how to play the game or how to prepare to play games.
And, you know, when I was researching this last night, when I saw Pruszynski had not been an All-Star since 2006, that really surprised me. How about you?
You know, yeah, I mean, especially what I saw him do at the age of 38 last year. You would think that somewhere along the lines he would have had a season that would have certainly put him in position. But you know how it goes. Sometimes you go back through the years and you say, well, he was – that's a tough position to gain an All-Star selection. But yeah, he's had a heck of a career, and when it's over, you know, his numbers are going to stack up there from an offensive perspective, but, you know, some of the best catchers of all time.
Joe, you're going to give your position either supporting or refuting each of these bold predictions, and of course the baseball gods on this Tuesday have given us a ready-made topic one, and that is Wei-Yin Chen as he signs a five-year deal with the Marlins this morning. So Joe, in his first season in a Marlins uniform, Wei-Yin Chen wins 15 games. Yay or nay?
Oh boy, you have to probably go nay just for the fact that the Marlins rarely have 15 game winners. It's been a long time, but you know, this is a significant signing. Getting Chen, it kind of fortified, you know, what they are looking for all offseason, which was a starting pitcher who could pitch at the top of the rotation. He probably profiles ideally as like a number three. And for the Marlins, he'll slide in as number two behind Jose Fernandez. The key numbers, Matt, we're looking at 190 innings, last year, 30-something starts. This guy has a track record and, you know, pitched to a low 3 ERA in the American League East, not an easy place to do, especially, you know, pitching in a hitter's park. Comes to Miami, comes to the National League, comes to a pitcher-friendly park. So he could be, you know, certainly above 10. You know, if he gets to 15, I'm sure they'll be elated. That's kind of, to me, a slightly high bar. Maybe 13, 14 wins could be the more realistic.
But as you said, nonetheless, he could easily become the best pitcher on this staff, not named Jose Fernandez, of course. And that leads us into prediction number two. Jose Fernandez will be traded after the club receives a godfather offer from somebody. What do you think the chances of that are?
Less than zilch, you know, no chance. Name was available pretty much in listening mode only, you know, shortly before the winter meeting. Obviously, if a team presented something that caught their attention per team policy, the Marlins listen. I think a number of teams listen, but no one ever really makes it public that they would listen on their top young players. But, you know, I'm sure the New York Mets have gotten calls, you know, in the last year or so for guys named DeGrom and Harvey and Syndergaard. And I'm sure the conversations don't go very long once the demands get out there. Now, that being said, the Marlins were pretty open about it. But they were clearly one of the main stories at the winter meetings was Jose Fernandez, and some want to believe those were really realistic, that he could have been moved. As someone who's covered this team more than a decade, people around this team have heard this before. We heard Stanton was going to get traded. We heard Josh Johnson was going to get traded. Dontrell Lewis was going to get traded. And, you know, some of them obviously were traded, but not this early into their careers. Jose Fernandez will be a Marlin, and, you know, he ideally will emerge to be what they hope, and that's a Cy Young candidate and one of the dominant pitchers in the National League.
And I'm sure that Jose is not unhappy about remaining in Miami for his home games, because in his career, as you know and everyone knows, 17-0 and a 1.40 career ERA, so he's pretty good in that home ballpark, and it looks like he's going to be there to stay for the foreseeable future. Joe, prediction number 3 and 3A. This one is a two-parter. Part 1, Giancarlo Stanton stays healthy all season, and part 2, if he does, he hits at least 50 home runs.
Oh, man, this is the tough one because, you know, no one wants to wish injury or say that a guy is injury prone. You know, those aren't comfortable things to say. So I'm more of an optimist than a pessimist. So I will say he will stay healthy enough to play 140 plus games. 150 plus would be ideal. If he does that, Matt, it's hard to believe he will not hit 50 home runs because he was kind of tracking towards 60 this year and missed, you know, all that time the end of 14 after getting hit in the face by the pitch in Milwaukee, which, you know, did kind of a number of ranging his face. And one of the more frightening injuries we've seen in recent years. So you would have to think that Stanton, if there's a healthy Stanton, 140, 150 or more games, 50 home runs seems very realistic.
Topic four involving Marcell Ozuna, a fellow outfielder. A lot of buzz about him lately. And Joe, quite simply, Marcell Ozuna is traded before opening day, yes or no?
Probably now, no. I mean, bringing in Wei and Chen has kind of taken Marcell Ozuna off the trade block because he was, many viewed, and me being among them, the most viable option to bring in a young, controllable starting pitcher. So, you know, it wasn't a comfortable thing to consider moving a promising center fielder who's already hit 20-plus homers in the big leagues, which he did, a couple of years ago in 14. You know, you take him out of the lineup, that your lineup is not better. Your team is not better. Now, if you moved him for a controllable young pitcher, a Taiwan Walker or, you know, someone like that, which was a name earlier in the offseason, then you could see a deal being done. But the team has brought in Wei and Chen. They, you know, they went the route of being uncomfortable, which was signing a free agent, which cost you money. And in this case, a compensatory, you know, draft pick that they're going to forfeit. But on the flip side, it meant that there's no urgency now to move Marcell Ozuna, and I fully anticipate he will be a Marlin in 2016.
Spring training is just over a month away. That is pretty hard to believe. So in light of that, we're going to throw out some bold predictions for the Phillies for the 2016 season. And, Richard, you'll give your spot, either supporting it, shooting it down, and your take on these bold predictions. So, Richard, the first one we're going to toss out there is the one that's kind of been percolating for a few years now, has not happened yet, but is this the year that the Phillies finally trade Ryan Howard? What do you think?
I think it probably is, because now we're getting to the point where there's about $35 million left in his contract over the next 2 years, and the Phillies have made it clear they're willing to pick up virtually all of that. And I think Ryan can still be a productive, let's say, platoon player, part-time guy. I think when we get to June and July, there's going to be a team looking for that bat, you know. And a lot of that depends on how much baseball Ryan still has left in. And there have been moments the last couple of years where you looked at him and said, okay, he can still play. There are things he can still do. And there have been other moments where he looks just completely overmatched. So against right-handed pitching in the right situation, I think some team will look at him as a low-cost pickup that makes some sense.
Do you think he's destined for an AL team if a trade happens and is being a DH in his future for the most part?
You know, I think it's whoever can use a left-handed bat. Offense is in such short supply. You know, I could even see the Mets going after him or somebody like that. But, that, you know, the best option would be an AL team that could use get him some at-bats at first base, get him some at-bats at DH. You would prefer that over asking Ryan to come off the bench, which he hasn't done for his career and probably wouldn't be the thing you want, wouldn't be the way. But I think there's going to be some options for him, given the fact that the Phillies almost certainly are going to pay virtually all the salary.
So it appears that Ryan Howard's days as a Philly could be numbered here in the 2016 season or the dawn of it. At the other end of the spectrum, Odubel Herrera could become one of the mainstays for this next wave of Philly stars, what they're hoping will become stars. So, Richard, prediction number two, Odubel Herrera becomes one of the true breakout stars of 2016.
Yeah, I think he's got a great chance. And I think this is going to be a very, very exciting year for Phillies fans. You know, these recent trades for Hamill, for Rollins, for Papelbon, they've brought a slew of young guys in there. And I think Herrera, I think, obviously, Mikhail Franco. I think Nick Williams, the young outfielder they got from Texas. Jake Thompson. There's going to be stars in there. And I think by the end of this season, I think Phillies fans are going to be able to see down the road to a bright future that by opening day next year, the Phillies are going to have a completely different look with that new front office and the new roster. And there's going to be plenty to be optimistic about. And Herrera, 24-year-old young guy, is one of those. These clubs, do I fault the Phillies for keeping the band together too long? Absolutely not. That group of players finished first 5 years in a row. They changed the culture in Philly. They changed the way we think about Phillies baseball. They made going to Phillies games the thing to do in town. But now this is the next chapter, and Herrera is one of the kids right out in front of that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with all of that. And somebody else that the Phillies sent away recently, not one of their veterans, but a young guy in Ken Giles. So prediction number three for you, Richard, the Phillies will be seen as the clear-cut winners of the Ken Giles trade by season's end. What do you think?
Well, I think it's one of those trades that is going to be a clear-cut winner for both clubs. And I think, the Astros left ended last season with the sour taste of being six outs away from eliminating the Kansas City Royals. They see Ken Giles as one of the really dominant closers in the game over the next 5 to 6 years. And so to get a guy like that, that's the reason you have a great farm system. Having said all that, the Phillies did great in that trade. I mean, in Mark Appel, potentially a number one starter, Vince Velasquez, Brett Oberhauser, they got numbers in that deal. And so where are we going to look at it? I think it's one of those deals that you judge the Astros very simply. They get to the postseason, they got what they wanted out of the deal. But I think if the Phillies get two players out of that, two players in the Hamels deal, you say they did exactly what they want. I don't think it's a win-lose for both teams because both clubs are in such a different place, in the development of where their goals and where they're trying to get to in the near term versus the long term.
And you mentioned Mark Appel as being one of those young guys brought back in the Ken Giles deal. He has not yet lived up to that pedigree of being a number one overall pick. People thought we were looking at another Strasburg. That obviously has not materialized yet. So do you think another prediction here that a change of scenery for Mark Appel with the new organization will finally get him to realize all that potential and he really establishes himself as a major leaguer in 2016?
I think so. I think the first time a guy's traded, it's a gut punch. He grew up wanting to be a member of the Houston Astros. I think one of the reasons he didn't sign with the Pirates the previous year when he was drafted in the top 10 is that he thought he was going to be an Astro. And now two things happened. One, he saw players he was playing with, had been ahead of. They just zipped right past him. The Astros were very simple about their philosophy last year. If you pitch well enough, play well enough, you get to the big leagues. And Mark didn't consistently pitch well enough, even though there were nights you look at him, it's free and easy, 97 miles an hour coming out of his hands. But the slider is not what it was supposed to be. And then the other thing that happened was they traded him. They traded him. Forget that it was Ken Giles. They traded a guy that was going to be one of the cornerstones of their franchise. And that's going to be a wake-up call for Mark. I'm not sure that he needs a wake-up call. I think probably what he needs is to, he's a big, tall guy. Sometimes it's harder for those guys to be consistent in their mechanics. But I think what he just needs is somebody to bring him to the big leagues, maybe let him play the first month or two in the minor leagues, bring him to the big leagues and just say, okay, this is it. You got nothing else to prove, and we're going to let your talent take over. And in guys like this, situations like this, and they have a lot of guys in this boat, you have to put them in position to succeed. You have to put them in a nurturing environment. But, Matt, the bottom line is this guy is unbelievably talented. I mean, when you see him at his best, at the Futures game last year, he just blew people away. And I think I still think, even though it's been a bumpy road at the start, he's going to have a great career.